And joining us today is Jojo Moyes. Jojo is the author of the novel After You, which is a sequel to Before You. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But let me tell you a little bit about Miss Moyes. She was born in 1969. She grew up in London. And after different career changes, including stints as a minicab controller, typer of Braille statements for the blind and NatWest, and brochure writer for Club 1830, she also had her degree at Royal Holloway and Bradford New College in London University in 1992. And she worked at a newspaper doing various things, from being a reporter, a news assistant, news editor, arts and media correspondent. And that was in London. Hong Kong, where she worked at the South China Morning Post. And she became a full-time novelist in 2002. Her first book was Sheltering Rain. And as I told you earlier, you guys are all very familiar with, if you're a fan of Jojo Moyes, with the first novel. But the sequel is After You. And Jojo, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I read that you live in a farm out in Essex, England.
That's right. Yeah, in the middle of nowhere, which is kind of how I like it.
Okay. So I was going to ask you if Paul McCartney was one of your neighbors, but I guess not.
No, unfortunately not. But we're a couple of hours away from each other. But
okay.
No, I'm a huge fan.
Well, he could come over and you could write some lyrics and then he could write some music. And that way you could have the ballad of After You.
I'm always open to his office.
Okay. All right. I'll see if I can get in touch with him. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes people, when they read a story, they'll say, when they get to the end of the book, they go, well, that's it. Gosh, I wish it hadn't ended. And then others, you know that there's going to be, when one story ends, another one begins. And that is the case, I guess, with this one, although not necessarily, because there have been other novels that you have written. And I want to ask you about those titles as well. But the one that we're talking about is Me Before You, and the now is After You. Did you intend to write a sequel before it was written, before it was even on your mind? Because Me Before You just tore up the charts and went up and it became a bestseller. And I'm wondering if you were almost forced to write a sequel.
Well, it was a little bit like that, to be honest. I've never written a sequel. I've always tended to feel that if I revisited my characters, they would have made a mess of everything. And I didn't really want to kind of pull the curtain back on that. So I guess of all my books, though, Me Before You ended with a beginning. You know, it ended with Louisa kind of walking off into a new life in Paris. And what happened with this book was that I had this extraordinary response from readers. And I say that as someone who had not really had anything like that for the books that she'd written beforehand. But something about this book meant that thousands of readers over 3 years have been compelled to write to me or email me and tell me how they feel about Lou and how she in some way resonates with them and quite a lot about their own lives. And so every day for the last 3.5 years, I've been basically having Lou in my head when I answer these questions, whereas normally you just leave your characters behind. So when I finally allowed myself to ask that question, which was, would she have done? I suddenly came up with an answer, and that's when I knew I wanted to write the sequel.
And when you're reading this novel, After You, some people say, well, you have to read Me Before You before you read this, but I'm not sure if you do. I think you can also read it as a standalone. It makes you a little bit, you know, wondering. It makes you want to go read the other novel after you figure out that you've written one before that. But I think the reader is, as they're reading, you take them on this trip and you're wondering if Louisa is going to fall in love again and how is she going to recover. And also, I think people have been there before where they carry perhaps that guilt that someone might say, well, it was your fault.
Yeah. Well, I worked very hard to make it a standalone book because what I didn't want was for people to feel obliged to write the first one. But I do, to read the first one. But I do feel that if you know Louisa's story, the second one will resonate a lot harder. But yes, that was the thing I felt really fundamentally the more I thought about what Lou might have been doing with her life, which is that you couldn't be with somebody in the last moments of their life and be part of that and not be fundamentally affected by it. And knowing the kind of character she was, I just didn't feel she would be able to bounce off into the sunset, that actually there would be a long period of soul-searching and asking herself if she'd done everything she could and behaved in the way that she should. And the interesting thing about writing about grief, especially, is that often characters don't always behave like you want them to. You know, there was a point writing that book where I thought, gosh, she's taking longer to get past this than I really wanted her to. And so what I had to also do then was introduce some comedic elements, because in the same way that I did with Me Before You, I feel that you can give a reader a lot of tragedy to deal with as long as you can make them laugh too. And that's the balance that I always try to strike.
We are visiting with Jojo Moyes. She is the New York Times bestselling author of the novel After You. When you're writing about grief, as you mentioned, there are a lot of people when they're reading who may have dealt with something similar or some type of grief. And so they kind of feel Louisa's pain. But at the same time, you throw in a lot of other things. And as you mentioned about the characters, other authors I've spoken to say the same thing, that sometimes the characters take a life of their own. So can you explain to us, perhaps, how do the characters come alive to you and how do they dictate pretty much how you write?
Well, I'm one of those writers who believes that character is everything. I sort of feel like you can get away with an awful lot in a plot as long as the reader believes in the character and believes that the things the character does are true to themselves and not kind of shoehorned into some preordained idea of where the story should be going. So for me, Louisa was one of those characters that really just fell into my lap, and I knew her so well from day one that I didn't have to do a lot of what I normally do with characters, which is before I even put pen to paper, so to speak, I write out a whole history for them. I like to work out where they come from, what their background is, what their favorite food is, you know, how they would respond in certain situations. I have a kind of variety of tests that I put them through, which are quite revealing about character. So, for example, I have a thing called the kick the dog test, which sounds a little bit weird, but what would my character do if they were walking down the road and saw somebody kicking a dog? And that can tell you an awful lot about a person, because you say, well, would they pretend they hadn't seen? Would they go and intervene? Would they steal the dog? Would they kick the dog? You know, you can tell a lot about someone by those sorts of tests. And if it's a woman, without meaning to be too kind of sexist about it, often I'll work out what's in their handbag. That's always a good indicator of personality. Is it a really messy one? Is it full of bits of old biscuit and chewing gum and somebody else's keys? Or is it a kind of almost empty designer handbag? So I try to put characters through these tests, because what you find is that when you actually then introduce them to the page and you introduce them to the story that you want them to be part of, often you won't use 95% of that information. But what it does is it creates somebody in your head who is three-dimensional, so that when they introduce themselves to other characters and when you put them in situations, they respond in ways that are interesting and true to themselves.
It's interesting that you use that analogy of the handbag and what they have in there, because a lot of times by looking inside a bag or looking through someone's desk, you see a little bit of their life going back. What happened here? What happened then? Why
Absolutely.
Did she have this? And for Louisa, she has her handbag. The dog is there, but then she doesn't have the energy to kick or do anything. So she goes back home and she is forced to live with her family again, which is difficult.
Yeah, like anybody who's been forced to move home in their 20s, I think it can feel like a failure. And for her, I mean, interestingly, her handbag, if you like, her metaphorical handbag in this book is the apartment that she lives in, which she's basically been able to buy because of the generosity of a man who died. And because she feels overwhelming guilt that she wasn't able to save him, she doesn't feel able to make the flat any kind of home. You know, it becomes a symbolic of her mental space, if you like. So when we meet her for the first part of the book, this is a really empty home. It's not a home. It's not full of love or character, all the things that we would associate with her. And I guess I'm really interested in the way people show their characters, not through what you spell out on the page, but by, you know, those little symbols of love and loss.
And when she makes the decision to go to one of these, I guess, therapy groups, if you want to call them that, or support groups, well, I like the part that you say, you know, they have this, and but also terrible cookies.
And, well, you know, as I said, I didn't want this to be a gloomy book. I didn't want it to be so melancholy. And I've taken part in a lot of those sorts of, not therapy sessions, but group sessions, whether it's, you know, learning a new skill or talking through something that's happening locally. And I just love it as a writer when you get disparate groups of people forced together in a common cause. And it was one of those things where the characters literally keep running off with the stories. They were so funny, those people, to write, and kind of tragic as well, that actually I ended up having to cut about half their scenes out of the book because they were threatening to overwhelm it, which is kind of a nice place to be as a writer.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author and award winner Jojo Moyes. He is the author of the novel After You. And before that, she wrote Me and You. And I want to talk a little bit about your previous books as well, Jojo, because the titles, it seems like they all relate to relationships. One Plus One, The Girl You Left Behind, The Silver Bay. Am I correct?
Well, I don't consider myself to write primarily about love, but I am fascinated by human relationships. I'm particularly fascinated in the way that we as human beings often make the same mistakes and fail to kind of learn from them. So I guess, yes, every single book I write has relationship issues running through it, but I try to introduce something else. So, for example, of the ones you've mentioned, Silver Bay is actually about a whale-watching community in southern Australia. Me Before You is about an issue about the right to die, whether voluntary euthanasia is ever a good thing. I'm trying to think, what was the other book you mentioned?
The Girl You Left Behind.
The Girl You Left Behind is about art restitution in occupied France during wartime and who really gets to own a piece of art. But yes, the common thread to all of them is that they have love stories running through them. And I think possibly because I'm an ex-journalist, I'm just as interested in the kind of grittier aspects as I am about the love stories.
And I'm glad you pointed that out about the journalist, because you cover that in most of your novels. At least I read these two, but then I glanced at some of the other ones that you've written. But you approach this like a journalist would. You answer all the questions, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And even though in some instances the how may be a little later, and so you have to keep on reading to find out how it happens.
Yeah, that's my aim.
And good, yeah. And we don't want to give away the story here, but Louisa goes to these meetings at the same time because a lot of people have been through this. They go through the grief, and then all of a sudden they start feeling, they laugh or something, and then they feel guilty because, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be happy because this happened. And then they realize that, no, I need to go on. And Louisa does that, but then she gets a surprise visitor.
She does, and I don't want to say too much about who the visitor is, but what I quite enjoy is crashing things into people's quite ordinary lives.
And, you do.
And in this case, it's a 16-year-old girl called Lily who basically disrupts Louisa's slightly duck existence in good ways and in bad. But yeah, I think, again, one of the things that quite appeals to me in writing is pushing together people who have very little in common or who are very different personality types, because it's kind of entertaining to read about the tension between them. And I was also just kind of interested in the plight of teenage girls generally, because I feel that they're having to navigate a whole different landscape that, you know, I didn't have to negotiate when I was their age. So I'm kind of interested in what happens with technology and what happens when you're 17 and you might be isolated for various reasons. And yeah, she was a great fun character to write.
Because you mentioned Lily, I want to take the reader, the listener, back to when you were younger, when you were a child, when you were a teenager. Did you have an interest in writing all the time? Did you journal? Did you write letters? And for some silly reason, you know, we have it in our minds that men don't journal, only ladies do, and they don't journal, they write in their diaries. So there's a lot of stereotypes that need to be broken, and you do that in your novels. But I want to find out a little bit about you, as our listeners would care to find out. What did Jojo Moyes do when she was younger and before she became a writer?
Well, I was always a kid who wrote, and I think partly because I was an only child till I was 19, and there wasn't very good television back in those days. I was a complete bookworm, and I wrote stories all the time. But it was only really after I'd been a journalist for 10 years that I had any sense that I might have something valid to say. I was not really a journal writer for all sorts of reasons, but mostly, yeah, I think the world of fiction has always appealed to me more.
And what kind of stories did you write?
Mostly about a girl and her amazing telepathic pony who understood everything that she wanted.
Wow.
I was horse-obsessed, like a lot of girls that age, and there was an awful lot of very boring horse stuff that my parents had to dutifully read through and comment on. And then when I was a single girl living in London, I was working nights, and I used to write a lot in the day, and I used to write chapters and feed them through the doors of my neighbours and see whether they thought they were any good. And that was kind of quite a useful lesson, if you like, in trying to keep people hooked on a narrative. You know, I think the interesting thing about being trained as a journalist is you're led from the earliest days to believe that if a reader doesn't get past paragraph three, that's your fault. It's not the reader's fault. It's your fault. And I think there are a lot of novelists who expect that we should be compelled by their narrative, whatever, no matter how tricky they make it or how turgid or dull. And I'm just not one of those writers. I think it's my fault if you don't stick with my book. So I've learned over the years to speed things up a little at the start. I think my early books were too slow at the beginning. And just really to introduce enough twists and turns into the plot that hopefully you're going to want to keep reading.
We have no magic potion. You didn't use a magic ink in writing this. But what happened that before you just took off?
You know, I wish I knew, because I would have done it eight books previously. I think it was a number of things. I think, without realizing it, in writing about the right to die debate, I tapped into something that a lot of families were facing. When I wrote that book, I had two relatives who required 24-hour care to stay alive. And one of the things that preoccupied me and my family was the fact that we had two people who we loved who were being kept alive, and yet we had no way of offering them any kind of quality of life. You know, it was not a great existence for either of them. And I think if you have that in your family, it's very hard to maintain a kind of moral absolutism about those issues.
Would you care to share a little bit about that prequel for the benefit of our listeners who may have not read it?
Sure. Me Before You is the story of a man who had everything, a kind of master of the universe type, a very wealthy young man who worked in the city, earned a huge amount of money, beautiful girlfriend, led a huge life, you know, the kind of man who goes on adventure holidays and just basically sucks the marrow out of life. And in a very random accident, he's hit by a motorbike and left quadriplegic. And after 2 years of living completely dependent on other people, he's embittered and furious and decides that he doesn't want to live anymore. And it's the story of a small town girl with no ambition who goes to work as his carer. And they don't get on very well initially. And then she discovers that he plans to end his life. And she decides to make it her mission to change his mind. And it's what happens when these two very different people get together and embark on a series of adventures together as she tries to change his mind.
And after you wrote this novel, you know, people who read it are going, what happened? Or what would have happened? And, you know, we all tend to have fantasies about what we want to happen or not to happen, or this should have, or we could have. And so did you immediately feel the need to write the sequel, or was it later, perhaps at the urgence of your publicist? Or?
Oh, no, my publishers had nothing to do with it. I mean, the loveliest thing about my publishers is they never give me any direction. They just say, just write what you need to write and just make it good. You know, they don't push me in any direction. But after kind of 2-3 years of receiving emails about this book, and people asking what happened to her and wanting to know whether she actually did something with her life, I just found I was asking myself the same question. And when I did say to my publishers, how would you feel if I wrote a sequel, they were overjoyed.
And of course, as you mentioned, because your characters do come to life, I'm sure that Louisa was always at the back of your mind saying, let me go. I want to come in and do something. So your sequel starts, I think, about 18 months after what happens in the first book. And then we see the series of events that you already talked about, where she's forced to move back with her family. And then she moves on. She goes to the support group. But again, because there are always those struggles that people go through that they perhaps shouldn't be happy because something bad happened. Would you say that Louisa is kind of careful, a little bit cautious about falling in love again?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, most of us look around us. You get to a certain age, you see the damage caused to people by pain or by loss. And everyone would like to kind of move forward in an open-hearted, baggage-free manner. But very few of us can actually do it. And I just felt that it was going to take her a while and some very special people really to get back on her feet. And also to understand that it's okay to just handle things at your own time and in your own pace. I mean, the thing that I know from people who've really lost someone close to them is they always feel like they were expected to somehow get over it a bit faster than they actually wanted to. It's like, okay, it's been a couple of months now. You really need to get on with your life. And that doesn't work for a lot of people. Some people can. If you're lucky, you have that kind of mentality, which is always onwards and upwards. But most of us can't.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Jojo Moyes. She is the author of the recent novel, and it's already a bestseller, already climbing those charts. And it's a novel that is not really as, it can be a standalone. At least that's what I think, and that's me as a reader. And you listeners out there, if you've read the first one, you can let us know as well. But the second novel is called After You, and it picks up, as we mentioned, with Louisa, about 18 months after what happens to Will Traynor, and then she has to kind of lead life on her own. But she goes on a lot of different trails, different roads, and as JoJo mentioned, a lot of obstacles that perhaps we feel as people. And this is very timely we're doing this as well, for me anyway, because I lost my father-in-law last night, and this was something that we knew it was coming, but at the same time, you dread coming to that fork in the road.
I'm so sorry. And yes, that's exactly it. It doesn't make it any easier to know something is coming because, you know, one of the phrases I was more pleased with in this book, which I don't know, you may find resonates a bit, is someone talking about grief within the group says, when someone dies, you don't get over it. You just adapt around it. So you become like a ring donut instead of a bun, which I know it sounds like kind of a stupid analogy, but lots of people have already emailed me to say they understood what that meant. You just adapt around the hole. And if you love someone, eventually, hopefully, you can just learn to be glad that they were in your life rather than never having had them at all.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author JoJo Moyes. She is the author of the novel After You. And this is put out by Penguin Random House, and it's available, of course, Amazon or anywhere else that you may want to go. But if you want to find out more about JoJo and find out a little bit more about the book before this, you can go to JoJo Moyes. Is it .com?
That's it.
JoJoMoyes.com, and that's JoJoMoyes.com. And there's a lot of information that you can get and read some of. You know, I was looking at some of the other writings that you have, JoJo, and some of the titles to these articles, I guess, that appeared in different magazines or newspapers are very interesting. I mean, just the titles alone want to make you say, wait a minute, what is this about? I want to read this.
Like, well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, you're welcome. Can dogs really be an ad man's new best friend? Wind in the Willows, when it comes to romantic heroes, my heart belongs to Ratty. Where's the other one I liked? There was one here about royal weddings. Royal weddings, why old flames add a spark. And does Elizabeth Taylor's death signify the end of big romance? Those are titles that are just, well, you're a journalist. And, you know that people have to pick up when they see the headline. Or as I told my students a couple of days ago, a lot of people, they'll pick up a book, they'll read the first paragraph or the first page. And if it interests them, they'll read it, they'll buy it. But if not, as you know, being a journalist, as you mentioned, if you don't keep them writing, it's your fault, and they'll just go on to something else.
Well, I really hope that people think so, think like you.
Tell me how this has affected your life personally, as far as, do you check with your husband as far as being a little bit of an editor, or do you check with your friends, your publicist? I would think that, checking with your husband or with your wife is a little bit dangerous, because my wife always tells me the truth, and that's kind of not what you want to hear sometimes.
Oh, we have exactly the same thing. He's always my first reader, and usually what happens is he reads it, and then he says, well, I thought it was a bit slow to get going, and I don't really understand what this character's motivation is. And then I get really annoyed and say, you don't understand anything, and sulk for about 2 days. And then gradually I realize that he's probably right. But no, I really trust his opinion, and he's been right on everything so far. And for him, high praise is just when I get the book back and he goes, yeah, I liked it.
Great. So that's awesome.
And he goes, yep, that's it. And you go, okay, that's
a good one. Jolly good. So tell us a little bit about how has this affected you? What I mean by how, I mean the social media, ebooks, Kindle books, Nook books, the fact that books on tape, audiobooks, Audible, how has that affected you? And as far as reading, when I read this novel, I would say that if it was read aloud, it would work fine. And it would depend, of course, on who reads it. But your prose just flows very nicely and the story is there. So tell us about Audible books.
Well, I really enjoy them myself. And often I will listen to my own books when they get sent to me, because I usually do get a say in the actors who read them. And what you find is with the really good ones, you forget it's your story. So occasionally I've been on a long drive listening to one of my own books to see what it was like. And then I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what happens next, which sounds kind of crazy. But that's the magic of having your books translated into somebody else's words.
That's incredible because you're listening, as you mentioned. And if you're like me, I hate my voice. I don't like listening to it.
But my wife
will say, no, you need to listen because that's how you learn. And when we learn, when we're listening, sometimes we'll go, wow, that sounds great. Who wrote that? And your husband says, well, you did. Oh, okay. That's very good. As we get ready to leave, and we want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us, Jojo, give us once again your webpage or where people can go to find out more about your novel.
Okay, so my website is www.jojomoyes.com. That's JOJOMOYES.com. I'm also on Facebook under my name and also on Twitter, and I'll try to respond if you ask me questions about the book. It's a little trickier at the moment just because I'm on tour in the States and flying and, you know, traveling a lot, but I always do my best to answer people who've taken the trouble to read my books.
Well, Jojo, we want to thank you for taking the trouble to be with us this morning. We really enjoyed having a conversation with you. And once again, the novel is After You, New York Times bestselling author Jojo Moyes.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Eddie Rosales. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.